Must know drug lists. We're going to skip the psych part, unless you really want me to do the psych part. We're going to do complex, peds will be, and we'll breeze over the community because that's not till next semester, but since they're here, we might as well. I would like to remind you, though, that the must know drug list is cumulative. So for complex especially, you really need to review all of the previous drugs. Drugs like your beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, aspirin, heparin, warfarin, Lasix, all that is going to come back to haunt you. So you need to review those drugs as well. But since they're already on the podcast, we're not going to do them today. First drug is epinephrine. And epinephrine is released by your body from the adrenal glands. And it affects all of your adrenergic receptors, alpha 1, beta 1, alpha 2, alpha 1, beta 1, alpha 1, yeah, all of them. Can't talk. So what it's going to do is it's going to cause vasoconstriction, and it's also going to cause your heart to beat faster and stronger. So two major things we're going to use it for is, one is in cardiac arrest. We'll use it to bring the heart back to life. How many of you have ever seen the movie The Rock? Oh, yes! Remember at the very end, Nicolas Cage has to stab the needle into his heart and inject the stuff. Well, that's epinephrine he's injecting into his heart, because the nerve gas was basically acetylcholine. It was a cholinesterase inhibitor, or cholinesterase inhibitor caused too much acetylcholine in his heart stops. Because that's what acetylcholine does, slows down your heart till, in this case, stops. So to bring him back to life, he had to stimulate the heart with epinephrine. So even though this is not an ACLS class, the first three ACLS drugs are epi, and then atropine. Yeah, you should go back and look at that one too. And then epi again, and then atropine again, and then epi again, and then I think it's bicarb that time. But I'm not ACLS certified, so but we'll go over bicarb in a few minutes too. All right. So one use is for cardiac stimulation. The other one is for use in anaphylaxis and in status asthmaticus. Because it causes bronchodilation and because it causes vasoconstriction, we can use it to prevent death in those two diseases. Major adverse effects are things that you should think of. You know, if it causes the heart to beat stronger and faster, it can actually cause dysrhythmias, can cause chest pain because the heart beats too hard and now you cause angina pectoris. And because it causes vasoconstriction, it can actually cause necrosis of tissue. So interventions, you want to monitor it. Monitor vital signs, lung sounds, urine output, and you always want to give it to the largest vein possible. And you might have to give it intracardiac one day, just like The Rock. The next drug is norepinephrine. Brand name is Levofed, and the nickname for it is Leave 'Em Dead. So we use it really for two purposes only. One is heart failure and the other one is shock. And what it's going to do is it's going to stimulate alpha 1 and beta 1 receptors. It's going to cause the heart to beat stronger and faster, and it's going to cause vasoconstriction. Because of the vasoconstriction, one of the major adverse effects of it is too much blood pressure. Blood pressure can go too high, and you can also shut down renal perfusion. So you want to monitor urine output in those patients, and sometimes we'll give them mannitol, which is an osmotic diuretic, to make sure that their kidneys don't shut down. Just like epinephrine can cause tachycardia and high blood pressure. Dopamine. Dopamine is very similar, at least in terms of the way we use it. We use it again for heart shock and heart failure. There used to be what they call low dose and high dose, and some people might still use the high dose and low dose, but studies showed that the low dose really didn't do much good. So I think for the most part nowadays, it's mostly the high dose. We use it for, you can also use it for mild renal failure. That would be the low dose. Basically the same things as it is for Levofed. It can cause renal failure in high doses, and it can cause high blood pressure, tachycardia, angina pectoris. What do we use it for? Again, shock and heart failure. Lidocaine. Lidocaine we learned about as first as an anesthetic and then later as an antidysrhythmic. And when you give it here, it's going to be mostly as an anti-dysrhythmic or anti-arrhythmic. And what it does is it kind of just calms down the muscle cells in the heart, and just slows down neural potential, the neural action potentials. So if you remember way, way, way back, the reason nerves do what they do is because you've got sodium and potassium separated, sodium on the outside of the cell, potassium on the inside of the cell. And when you get the nerve impulse, you open sodium channels, allows all the sodium to come back in. So the way lidocaine works is by blocking those sodium channels. When you block the sodium channels, the nerve, and then hence the muscle, has a harder time discharging. So that slows down the neural transmission. We use it mainly for ventricular tachycardia. And this would be a drip, which means you have it on a pump, and you have to maintain, you might titrate it up or titrate it down according to the patient's rhythm and the orders that are given. If you give it in too high a dose, it can cause CNS depression, and it can actually cause comas. CNS depression. Yeah. So it makes a person drowsy, makes them less likely to breathe. Did I say excitation? Oh. It can do that too.
Sure.
But it can also cause, it can cause respiratory, thyroid, and neurofunctions to go down. Neurofunctions to go down. Yes. All right, adenosine. Adenosine is another antiarrhythmic, and it's really used for one purpose only, and that is for stopping what we call SVT, or supraventricular tachycardia. And if you remember way back to pathopharm, that's a code word for atrial tachycardia. The way it's usually given is what they call like IV slam. You don't push it in slowly, you go and you slam it in. And then afterwards the patient will go and they'll have the incredible chest pain for about 15 seconds, and then hopefully it all goes away. Next we have integrilin and riopro. These are glycoprotein 2B3A receptor inhibitors. And if you remember way, way back to pathopharm, when you have a clot, the first part of a clot is platelets holding hands. And then the platelets tie ropes around themselves, and those ropes are called fibrin. And the ropes are tied to a receptor called the GP2B3A receptor. So these drugs inhibit that receptor, which makes it so that the clot is formed of only platelets holding hands and is not stabilized by the fibrin. We use these primarily for one purpose, and that's acute coronary syndrome. Now, acute coronary syndrome is unstable angina and ST elevation MIs. And then, in addition to that, we'll also use them sometimes for cath lab procedures, like if the patient has a stent or an angioplasty, sometimes they'll use that afterward. Number one problem with these is bleeding. So, contraindicated in patients with extreme bleeding risk. They're always given IV, so you need to monitor the patient very carefully because they can go from therapeutic to bleeding relatively quickly. All right, next we have tenecteplase, or TPA, tissue plasminogen activator. The moment your body forms a clot, it begins to break it down. And the very first part of that breakdown is you break the fibrin that's holding the clot together. And so your body has what we call fibrinolytic agents. And TPA is a natural substance found in your body. Tenecteplase, or TPA, as a drug, is an artificial version of that, which tries to break down the fibrin. So the drug class is called a thrombolytic, or a clot buster. So you can use these in patients who have had a stroke or an MI, as long as it hasn't been too far along. And they're usually best if they're given within 2 hours. But you can actually give them after that. But again, you're going to get the best results within the first 2 hours. So early identification is extremely important. The other thing about the thrombolytics is that they have an extreme risk of bleeding. That's why it is bolded and italicized. We don't use these for prevention. We only use them to treat existing clots. And so strokes, MIs, and pulmonary embolism. You can use it for a DVT, but it's very rare that they would actually use it for just a DVT. So anytime you have a patient on a bleeding medication, you want to implement what we call bleeding precautions, which include things like don't use razor blades, limit needle sticks, avoid contact sports, don't floss too hard, use a soft toothbrush, etc. Next, we have Nicirotide or NatriCor. Nicirotide is artificial BNP, which stands for B-natriuretic peptide. It's produced by both your brain and your ventricles when your ventricles are being stretched too much. So what happens in heart failure is you get a fluid overload. And in response to that, your body produces more BNP to try and tell your kidneys get rid of this extra water. So we can use BNP levels to measure how bad someone's heart failure is. The higher their BNP level is, the worse the heart failure. But in terms of drug, we can give artificial BNP to cause vasodilation and diuresis. These are given IV only, and it's only in the ICU. So that's the only place that you'd see these, and they're given for patients who have heart failure. You're not going to see this drug on a regular hospital floor. So you want to monitor blood pressure and urine output and heart function. Yes, ma'am.
Is it higher BNP, worse the heart failure?
Yes. Yeah.
So why would you give BNP?
Okay, the reason is in heart failure you have kind of a misbalance of hormones. You've got renin and angiotensin aldosterone and epinephrine, norepinephrine, and ADH that are all saying, hold on to water. And you only have BNP that's saying, get rid of water. So your body tries to compensate by raising the level, but it can't raise it enough to actually counterbalance all of those hormones. But when we give it as a drug, we can give enough to where it begins to balance it out. So that's what we call decompensation. Decompensated heart failure is when those other hormones outbalance the BNP. So by giving extra BNP, we can kind of bring them back into balance. You oftentimes see this given in combination with the inotropics, the dopamine levofed, and sometimes in combination with Lasix, because it'll help additionally give more diuresis. Really important when you give these types of drugs, you want to make sure that you don't go too far the other direction and bottom the patient out in terms of blood pressure. Next, we have propofol, also known as Diprivan, a very, very fun drug implicated in Michael Jackson's death. I don't know, I haven't heard any updates on it. Getting good information out of the media is almost impossible. So, but anyway, hopefully that will help you remember propofol, Michael Jackson. This drug is milky white. And the reason it's milky white is because it's based on soy protein. So because of that, it's very easy for bacteria to grow in it. So patients are at risk for infection after they get this drug because the drug is in a soy-based medium. What we use it for is induction of anesthesia. It causes very rapid onset drowsiness. And, it's one of those things where the anesthesiologist or nurse anesthetist hooks the IV up to you and goes, okay, you're going to feel a little bit of a sting. And they start putting it in, and you go, wow, you feel the sting all the way up into here. And then you're like, that really, you're gone. It only lasts about 3 to 5 minutes, so you have to continue pushing it a little bit at a time to maintain that unconscious state. It's supposed to only be administered by nurse anesthetists and by anesthesiologists or physicians. It shouldn't be administered by nurses. But every now and then, you'll find a doctor who grabs a nurse, hey, I need to do this procedure here. I'm going to tell you to push this, and you're supposed to say, no, thank you. That's not out of my scope of practice. There have been some nurses who have gotten into problems with it. The drug is fairly safe, but it can cause respiratory depression and arrest, which is why it needs to be done by an anesthetist or anesthesiologist. A main thing you need to know is that it's used for anesthesia, and that when the patient, it wears off very quickly, so the patients tend to wake up quickly, and they tend to have what we call the three H's: happy, horny, and hungry. Although, I've had this drug twice. The procedure I was getting was like, I was the very first one of the day. It was like I had to be at the hospital by 5:30, and they were completely done with the procedure by 9 o'clock. And I slept till like 9:30. They're like, "Wow, you took a long time to come out." I'm like, "I shouldn't even be awake yet. I don't know what you're talking about." Yeah. Would you be awake at 9 o'clock if you didn't have to? Exactly. Then the next, and I was sleepy that whole day. And I went home. I just slept until like 4 o'clock that afternoon. And I was still groggy. But then the next time I had it, you know, I woke up, and like 30 minutes later, I was like, "Okay, I'm ready. I'm done. I'm good," and you know, was fine the rest of the day. So I think maybe the anesthesiologist the first time gave me a little bit heavy a dose compared to the second time. But again, it's a very safe drug when used properly. The major thing you have to watch for afterward is infection. During it, you need to watch for respiratory depression. Next, we have midazolam, also known as Versed. This is a benzodiazepine. It's only given IV, and it's extremely short-acting. It only lasts about 5 minutes. We use this in combination with opioids to produce something we call conscious sedation. So in contrast with propofol, where you're out like a light, with Versed, you're still awake, but you're out of it. And because benzos can cause anterograde amnesia, once it wears off, you're like, "What happened? I don't remember. What was going on?" So if you need to do a procedure where you want the patient to be able to talk and respond or maybe move, then you could use this. The patients don't really remember what happened afterwards, and when you combine it with the opioid, they don't really feel much pain. We used to use this a lot for colonoscopies, but in the last 3 or 4 years, they've switched more to propofol and away from the Versed. But you still will see it occasionally. Next, we have mannitol. I mentioned mannitol earlier when we talked about levofed and dopamine. It's an osmotic diuretic. It's a sugar alcohol that your body can't reabsorb once it gets filtered by the kidney. So you have a bunch of this mannitol in the proximal convoluted tubule, and that sucks a whole bunch of extra water into the urine. So it makes a person go to the bathroom more. The major reason we use this is to prevent renal failure when a patient has shock or heart failure and is getting levofed or dopamine. And also to mention the other inotropic drug is dobutamine. And that's not usually used for heart failure. It's more used for shock. And the other reason you'll see dobutamine used is for stress echocardiograms. If the person can't walk on the treadmill to raise their heart rate, they'll give them the dobutamine. It'll make their heart pump faster and stress the heart for that. So that's the major place you'll probably see it. Next, we have naloxone or Narcan. It's the antidote for opioids. So you don't use this unless their respiratory rate is under 6, usually. Every time a patient in the hospital has an order for an opioid, they should also have an order for this. So you want to monitor their breath sounds, monitor their heart rate, and you should never leave them unattended, because if it wears off and the opioid goes back, they can go back into respiratory depression. So, you know, you get them out of the woods and you're like, "Okay, whew, saved him. All right, I'll see you later." You come back later, they're back in respiratory depression again. So once they've needed the Narcan, they can't be unattended for several hours, basically until the opioid is worn off. All right, next one is sodium bicarb. This is what's in Alka-Seltzer, or the original Alka-Seltzer anyway, and you can use it externally as an antacid. That is not what we care about. What we care about is the next slide, which is when we give it IV. It's a very weak base, it's an alkaline, and what it does is it shifts, remember the carbonic acid equation? It shifts the carbonic acid equation more towards carbon dioxide, which is going to raise the pH of your blood, and we use it to treat acidosis, especially metabolic acidosis. You can also use it to treat respiratory, but it's not quite as common. So remember when a patient is dead, and we give them their epi, atropine, after a while of being dead, the person's not breathing, their heart's not pumping, what are their cells doing? Instead of using oxygen, they're producing lactic acid. And that lactic acid is going to build, level's going to build up in their blood. And so when you give the bicarb, it brings them back down to a more neutral level. And you have to be doing CPR as you do this, because as you're doing CPR, that's pumping that bicarb you just put into their vein through their blood. If you give them the bicarb but don't do the compressions, it's not going to be circulating through their body and it won't work.
So you're giving this with the IV all at the same time and CPR?
Well, not all at the same time, but I mean, you give the epi, that didn't work. You give the epi again, that didn't work. You give the epi again, that didn't work. You give atropine, that didn't work. If it works, you stop.
Right.
You know, if it doesn't work, then eventually you'll get to, all right, let's give them bicarb, and then we'll start over again. We can also use this as a treatment for hyperkalemia, because if you recall, during acidosis, potassium shifts out of the cells into blood and out of the urine into blood. So by giving bicarb, it shifts the potassium back into cells and back into the urine. So even if a person doesn't have acidosis, you can still use it to treat hyperkalemia.